Good afternoon. Like to call to order the May 20th, 2022 meeting of the House, of the E-12 Education Conference Committee. Mr. Lee, would you please start by taking the role of the House members?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Davity?
Present.
Representative Richardson?
Present.
Representative Sandstead?
Present.
Representative Hassan?
Present.
Representative Erickson.
Erickson, present.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Mr. Florell, would you please do the same with the Senate members?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Chamberlain. Senator Eichhorn.
Present.
Senator Coleman.
Present.
Senator Duckworth.
Here.
Senator Wieger.
Here. Thank you, Mr. Florell, and to members of the public who may be watching, this is a very busy time of the year at the legislature. Both the House and the Senate are currently meeting in floor session, and my understanding is that Chair Chamberlain has one or more bills up on the floor at this time, and so he's involved in Senate work. I hope he's able to join us either in person or remotely at the conclusion of that work. It's Friday afternoon. Today, the House provides a framework for agreement. It reflects what Minnesotans have been telling us all session. It respects each party's established priorities, moves significantly to middle ground, provides schools with the right combination of dedicated funding to support districts better meeting student needs, while also providing greater flexibility through other avenues to meet local needs as they identify them. Minnesotans from across the state, through our leadership, want us to get to an agreement. Out of respect for Minnesotans, and especially the timeline our staff needs to process an agreement, delay is not an option. Neither should be failure. My team has continued with their remarkable work ethic, put in the time and effort needed to present this framework for agreement. Lastly, the House is providing the Senate with a list of no-cost policy items to consider in response to the second offer from the Senate that we received yesterday that includes critical policy provisions to respond to the needs of Minnesota students. As we received that policy proposal yesterday from the Senate, why don't we start with that? So I'm going to ask Chair Richardson, who chairs the Education Policy Committee in the Minnesota House, to lead that review. Chair Richardson, if you would, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I will just do a quick walkthrough here of the sections and subjects of the offer that we have before us today. Starting with Indigenous Peoples Day, that provision reflects what we currently do for President's Day and ensures that there would be an hour of instruction on Indigenous Peoples Day. Article 1, Section 4 is a definition section related to individualized learning agreements and other types of agreements related to online learning. Article 1, Section 5 is around board members and giving school boards more flexibility as it relates to working with school board members with employment. Right now, I believe it is an $8,000 cap for school board members, and that would allow flexibility up to $20,000 a year for a board member to be able to have a right to employment. Article 1, Section 9 is another flexible option for boards as it relates to transportation and allows non-public schools to enter into agreements with public schools related to transportation. Article 1, Section 41 increases the compensatory revenue percentage to be spent at a generating site from 50% to 80%. There's some technical repealer language under Article 153. Article 2, Section 1 relates to tribal nations and data sharing. And this is really around ensuring that Indigenous students who are connected with their respective tribes, that there can be data sharing to track the progress of those students. Article 2, Section 8, is delaying the physical education standards. Article 2, Section 14 and 44 relates to recess for all. We heard really compelling testimony previously around that to ensure that students are getting access to recess and not using that as a form of punishment. Article 2, Section 24, is some limits on local testing. And Article 2, Section 33 extends the current pre-kindergarten suspension ban to grade 3 to ensure that our students are in the classroom to get access to the important literacy supports that it needs in order for those students to be reading by grade 3 and by age 8. Article 2, Sections 34 through 38 and 40 through 43 is around non-exclusionary disciplinary policies and practices. Again, just noting that Minnesota has some of the worst disparities in the nation as it relates to school discipline disparities for students with disabilities and for Black and Indigenous students. Article 2, Section 48 is around the Post-Secondary Education Opportunities Act and ensuring reporting. Article 2, Section 59 is related to a separate office for American Indian Education Director and Liaison. Article 2, Section 60 relates to ensuring that Indigenous students can wear tribal regalia at graduation ceremonies. There was just a national story just yesterday around a student who was prohibited from wearing tribal regalia at her graduation, and so this is something that is really timely. Article 2, Section 78. This is a no-cost policy provision related to the Santa Foundation that basically gives them additional time period to expend down current funds that they have access to. Article 2, Section 84 is a technical revisor's instruction. Article 3, Section 3, there's an updated definition of teacher shortage area. And this is also a bill that I think just moved through the Senate recently as well. Article 3, Section 4 is another reporting section. Article 3, Section 18 relates to QCOMP and its uses and places some limitations upon that. Article 3, Section 22 is related to the Teacher of Color and Indigenous Teachers Act and is around mentorship and retention pieces, which is really critical right now with the workforce shortage that we are continuing to see that impacts our schools as well. Article 3, Section 32 is related to the Teacher Supply and Demand Report. Article 4, Section 10 is around admission requirements and enrollment related to the Metro Deaf School, which is also another bipartisan bill that has been heard in both parties. Article 4, Section 14 is around school closures and payments of aid to charter schools. Article 6, Section 4 is around malicious and sadistic conduct prohibition. And as we discussed previously with the recent events that just occurred in Buffalo, New York, we know that there is, in fact, movements that are focused on hate, that are focused on white supremacy. And this is a provision that really speaks to ensuring that we are setting up a school system that is not going to be a safe haven for white supremacy or hate as it relates to students of color. Article 7, Section 3 is a fund transfer related to the Burnsville, Egan, and Savage School District. Article 7, Section 4 is around lease levy for Eastern Carver County Schools. Article 8, Section 2 relates to meals in the summer food service program. Article 8, Section 6 is around services to people with both visual and physical disabilities and speaks to the responsibilities of libraries. There's Article 8, Section 16, which is a technical revisor instruction. Article 9, Section 1 is around tribal Head Start set-asides. And Article 9, Section 13 and 14 is around early learning scholarships. And then there's also a couple of articles around school trust lands that are included as well.
Chair Richardson, thank you very much. I'm hoping that that shared list and combined list of policy priorities that has great similarity with the list that the Senate provided us yesterday provides a strong base for agreement on policy priorities. And I hope that our proposal today also takes us into a strong place for agreement on the finance portions of the bill. Ms. Beckel, I'm going to ask you to be on deck, if you can be prepared to walk through the spreadsheet. But before you do that, I'd like to highlight the shift towards the Senate that the House has made. From our last offer to this, we have reduced spending in a number of areas that were priorities for the House. That has allowed us to increase our special ed cross-subsidy reduction aid by 60% in 2023, 60% shift up in special education cross-subsidy aid and 61% increase in the TALES. So we see that as a significant movement towards the shared priority of special ed cross-subsidy and hope that that gets us to an agreement today. Ms. Beckel, could you please walk us through the finance spreadsheet?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Solveig Beckel, House Fiscal. I'll share my screen now. This spreadsheet displays the House offer for May 20th today. The House proposes spending on line 12 for the compensatory revenue adjustment, $5.021 million in fiscal year 23 only. Line 13, the House proposes 25% coverage of the English learner cross-subsidy aid, which would have costs of $47.57 million in fiscal year 23 and $108.044 million in fiscal years 24 and 25. The House proposes retaining the English learner reduction of $2 million per year on line 14. This is just removing a provision that was put in the 2021 session. Line 15 goes along with line 16. Line 16 makes the existing VPK seats permanent. This would have a cost of $39.416 million in the TALES. The levy equalization that goes along with this and equalizes the operating capital levy is $6.09 million in fiscal years 24 and 25. Line 17, the House increases its special education cross-subsidy reduction aid, and the House funds this at $154.531 million in fiscal year 23 and $364.97 million in the TALES. The House also proposes bold funding that includes a $10 million appropriation in fiscal year 23 for letters on line 19. On line 20, it includes appropriations of $800,000 per year for the literacy unit administration. Line 21, the House includes funding for expanding literacy and dyslexia data collection. This was a consensus item from the last Senate offer. This is funded at $1.2 million each year ongoing. Line 22, the House funds the Level 4 Mental Health Innovative Grant Program at $9 million per year. Line 23, the House funds the mental health leads at MDE at $226,000 in fiscal year 23 and $602,000 in the TALES. Line 24, Student Support Personnel Aid, the House funds this item at $27.189 million in fiscal year 23 and $64.579 million in fiscal years 24 and 25. Line 25, the House funds School Meals Aid at $8.293 million in fiscal year 23 and $16.493 million in the TALES. Line 26, the House funds Mental Health Services and Early Childhood Social Workers at $5 million in fiscal year 2023 only. Line 27, the House includes hourly school workers unemployment insurance. This is a cost to the career and technical levy equalization of $56 million in fiscal years 24 and 25. This priority spending on the House's behalf totals $266.83 million in fiscal year 23 and $674.194 million in fiscal years 24 and 25. The remaining spending, the House proposes to spend in three buckets, so to speak. Line 33, the House establishes an amount of $20 million in fiscal year 23 and $2.07 million fiscal years 24 and 25 for Senate discretionary spending. Line 35, the House proposes an equal amount of discretionary spending to the Senate at $20 million in fiscal year 23 and $2.07 million in fiscal years 24 and 25. The House's priorities include, on line 36, transportation sparsity aid funding of $2.238 million in fiscal year 23. Line 37, consolidation transition aid increases of $900,000 in fiscal year 2023. Line 38, computer science blueprint funding of $20,000 in fiscal year 2023. Line 39, Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs STARS chapter funding of $45,000 in fiscal year 2023. Line 40, Network for the Children of African Descent, $1 million in fiscal year 23. Line 43, the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educators of Color increase of $2 million in fiscal year 2023. Line 44, a Grow Your Own increase, these funds would be transferred to the Special Revenue Fund, of $8.14 million in fiscal year 2023. Line 45, an appropriation to the Minnesota Science Teachers Association of $611,000 in fiscal year 2023. Line 46, non-exclusionary discipline training thing of $5 million in fiscal year 2023. Line 47, long-term facilities maintenance aid increase of $2.07 million in fiscal year 25 only. Line 48, compensatory education working group, and line 49, special education working group. The House proposes funding these items at $23,000 per year, or $23,000 in fiscal year 23 only. Line 51 includes administration priorities. Line 52 is the average daily membership change for children with disabilities. This includes the early childhood special education EL funding. This would have costs of $511,000 in fiscal year 23 and $1.301 million in the TALES. Line 53, reducing disparities for young children with disabilities. This is also related to the average daily membership change with relation to breakfast. This has a cost of $172,000 each year. Line 54, provision of special instruction, increasing the age to 22. In fiscal year 2023 only, this would have a cost of $3.661 million. There is an additional special education cost that goes along with increasing the age to 22. This has a cost of $21,000 in fiscal year 2024 only. Line 56 displays the multi-tiered systems of support total, and lines 57 through 60 show the detail. Line 57, the funding for regional centers, MDE, and service cooperatives is $1.826 million. Line 58, funding for districts, charters, and co-ops for implementation is $3 million in fiscal year 2023. Line 59, Building Assets Reducing Risks Center, or the BAR Center, funding of $3 million in fiscal year 2023 only. Line 60, the University of Minnesota Center for Applied Research and Educational Improvement, $1 million in fiscal year 2023 only. This other priorities spending total of the three buckets totals $53.17 million in fiscal year 2023 and $5.806 million in the TAILS. This total spending totals to $320 million in fiscal year 2023 and $680 million in fiscal years 2024 and 2025, which matches the TAILS. And that is the spreadsheet, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Beckel. Thank you, Ms. Beckel. Members, I want to speak briefly to the structure of this proposal and why we see this as a framework for an agreement, hopefully a framework for an agreement today. And then I want to invite the commissioner to come forward to expound on the administration's other priorities. You'll note that in the spreadsheet, we propose the House and the Senate both receiving $20 million in fiscal year 23 and an additional $2,070,000 in fiscal 24 and 25 to use on priorities of their choosing. We do short the administration a bit because they only receive $13,170,000 in fiscal year 23 and in 24 and 25. $1,666,000 in 24 and 25. So this allows each participant, particularly the House and the Senate, to identify priorities that they would like to put particular attention on. You'll see on the spreadsheet, starting on line 35, the House has already identified our priorities. We would not, of course, attempt to identify those for the Senate. We want to respect the Senate's own choices there. We provide three items that are of particular interest to our Greater Minnesota school districts. That's line 36, the transportation sparsity aid. There certainly are some large, geographically large metro districts that will benefit from this as well. But when you get north, the districts tend to get big, even if the number of students is not. The consolidation transition aid increase to help facilitate districts who choose to consolidate. The House sees that as a net positive for those districts who choose to do that. It reduces administrative costs, allowing them to put more of their state aid and local levy into teaching and learning and less on school administration, and hopefully helps bring some schools, school districts and some communities together. And then line 47, long-term facilities maintenance aid increase. We recognize that particularly a number of Greater Minnesota districts have aging buildings. Our current formula for long-term facilities maintenance aid puts some quirks in it that penalizes districts who attempt to build buildings, spaces that better meet current needs and demands of how we teach and how students learn today. So providing some additional funding in that area to support that. Line 38, the computer science blueprint. Representative Albright was just up on the House floor in response to the higher education bill, talking about the critical and urgent need for more people trained in cybersecurity. Strengthening Minnesota's position in computer science education better prepares more young people to be trained in cybersecurity. Right now, according to code.org, Minnesota ranks 50th in the nation in computer science education. And just as we have argued consistently that 49th in the nation is unacceptable when we come to the ratio of school counselors to students, 50th in the nation certainly is unacceptable in area of education that is so profoundly important in the modern age. Moving on, the Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs STARS chapter. The state provides financial support to a number of student programs to help build leadership skills among young people. We have not historically provided that same opportunity to students in alternative schools. This is a $45,000, a very, very small amount of money that they would be able to use over several years to build leadership skills amongst those students. When we think about literacy, we think about literacy for all. You see that in our ELL cross-subsidy proposal. We know that the numbers, literacy is not where any of us want it to be in Minnesota. And we share across these bodies and with the administration a sense of urgency. When we look at what we know about students learning to read, we see that our English language learner students are most challenged in that. And this, the additional funding we propose in the English learner cross-subsidy aid is intended to bolster those opportunities so that students can better learn to read and better learn beyond that. The funding we provide, the Network for the Children of African Descent, is targeted funding on an effective program that supports young people of African descent in learning in a culturally enriched and connected way. We had two testifiers here on Wednesday who spoke of the program, lead the program, and talked about its family engagement and the effect that it had on their children and the children who participate in the program. We continue our commitment to the Teachers of Color and Indigenous Teachers programming. We did good work collaboratively last year. We hope to continue that this year. That's shown on lines 43 and 44. The CUGMIC programs, the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educator Programs, are targeted programs that have demonstrated effectiveness. We have expanded the number of programs in the state. We have not expanded the funding for those programs. So the pie pieces keep getting smaller as new programs develop. And in order to support those programs that include targeted programs for different groups to be able to become teachers and be at the front of the classroom, to ensure that the front of the classroom looks a little bit more like the kids in the classroom, we believe this is a very worthwhile investment. Also, we know that the Grow Your Own programs across the state are highly effective in taking our taking education support personnel and others working in school buildings today and helping them develop into licensed teachers. And the real strength in the chair's mind with these programs is two-part. These tend to be more richly diverse populations coming into teaching, and we tend to have a much higher retention rate of these individuals in teaching. Makes sense. They know what they're getting into because they've been working in schools. We consider that to be a very worthwhile investment. Line 45, the Minnesota Science Teachers Association. The state reviewed and updated its science standards only recently. It's a stronger set of standards that should yield better teaching and learning in the state. But in doing so, we flipped a few things around that have significant impact on teachers' ability to teach the same coursework and materials that they have in the past. We moved some classes across licensure lines, and so we have a number of science teachers across the state who need support in maintaining their credentials to be able to teach what they know and teach effectively. The Minnesota Science Teachers Association has come forward with training programs to facilitate that instruction and those teachers being able to retain their positions and continue to teach. Science teaching, of course, is a shortage area, so keeping these teachers in the classroom, even if we change the grade level of the classroom, is a key workforce item. Again, back to literacy, line 46. As Chair Richardson has said so frequently, if a kid isn't in the classroom, they can't learn how to read. And we know that there are significant and disturbing racial disparities in who's suspended and who's retained in a classroom on any given day. And as I said the other day, when we see wrong, I believe we have a responsibility to do right. And so we have policy for non-exclusionary discipline for kindergarten through third graders, but we provide training for schools to be able to implement this new policy. Long-term facilities maintenance aid on line 47, I've already spoken to. And then two work groups. We need to look beyond May 23rd, 2022, and recognize that there are some areas of state policy in education that require an opportunity for stakeholders and people with insight from across the state to come together. One of them deals with compensatory education. There's some interesting questions there. We attempt to answer some of those this year, but there's more conversation to have about compensatory education, how it's generated and how it's spent. So we propose a working group in that area. And then special education is an area that we are proposing putting significant funding into, but also needs to be looked at for possible reforms in how that operates. And so that's what we see on line 49. Those are the ways that the House proposes dealing with its priority areas in the set-aside given to each of the two houses. I'd now invite Commissioner Mueller to come forward and review how the administration proposes to utilize its smaller pot. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much, Chair Dabney. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Heather Mueller, and I am the Commissioner for the Department of Education. I appreciate having the opportunity to be here today. I just want to first start with saying that we really appreciate having a very strong package that has been brought forward both in budget as well as in policy, and are going to walk through a couple of things that we know that we want to be able to highlight that we believe are continue to be important components from the administration's perspective, in addition to what has been added from both the House as well as the Senate. In looking at our work in the areas, first and foremost, starting on line 18, we really want to start with the bold literacy plan. As you know, this is something that we have had a lot of conversations about. The letters component of that has been a priority that has been set forward by Chair Chamberlain since the beginning of throughout last year, as well as throughout this legislative session. And we believe in that work. We have been able to move forward with that pilot. And have found that we are finding success with that. But we also know that when we talk about professional development and when we talk about training, it is not a one and done. We know the implementation science, and we are well aware of the research that supports what needs to be done to provide ongoing support for our educators. That means that we need to be able to provide expanded supports for our literacy administrative team. It also needs to be able to provide ongoing work, and that'll be coming later in our multi-tiered systems of support. We know that there are some pieces that we need to be able to look at as it pertains to expanding literacy and dyslexia data collection, so that way we know that if we are looking for a target by third grade, our first point of data cannot be in third grade. We need to be able to look at that information at a K-2 level to be able to have and ascertain where we are as a state to be able to help, again, be proactive instead of consistently being reactive. When we think about that, that's an entirety of an approach, and we believe, again, that letters is a really important component and a strong component of the science of reading, but we need to be able to ensure that we have an entire package that helps to support the implementation of letters for its success. We also know that when we look at things like making existing VPK seats permanent, we have heard the testimony, we know the research, and there has been a strong investment in early learning since for the last 10 years. And so we know that we want to ensure that that is something that our families can count on. We've had a lot of conversations in the conference committee about local control as well as state expectations. This gives us the opportunity to lay out what clearly are state expectations that we have equity and equitable abilities across the state for our students to access early learning services. And so this is one place we know that we need to be able to make that permanent. We know that it also has an investment in ensuring that when we are talking about literacy, again, it is a proactive approach to be able to provide that support. And so we appreciate that being included in this. I think that one of the strongest other pieces of this are the cross subsidies. We know that, again, going back to the conversations we've had about local control, as well as with investing in what we expect for all students across the state of Minnesota, this gives us the opportunity to do a combination, again, of and. We have lived in the tyranny of or for a number of years because we have had to really think about it's one thing or another because of where we are in the budget. We have the opportunity to live in the beauty of and. And so this means that when we are able to provide expansions in supports of the cross-subsidy and are buying the cross-subsidies down in our school districts, both in EL and in special education, that also then gives money back in the general fund, which means that there is the opportunity for local control for school districts and charter schools across the state to make decisions about what is happening in their school districts and in their charter schools, because instead of allocating those funds directly to the cross subsidies in order to meet the expectations of both the federal and the state governments, they have the opportunity to make those choices. And so those are incredibly important components. As we go further down and really think about what we've identified in some of those additional priorities that have been laid out, and we appreciate having some funding set aside for those. They are incredibly important pieces. They may look very small on paper, but they mean a lot for our schools and for our students. The very first piece is to really talk about the ADM for children with disabilities. There is essentially a loophole and a problem within that. If you are a student who is receiving EL services and special education services, you actually are not funded at the same level of ADM. And so you instead are at a lower level. And so we want that funding to be at the level that it is supposed to be for every other student across the state as they are making those. In addition, if you are a kindergarten student and you are receiving special education services, in order to get to that full ADM, you actually need more hours than a student who is not in a special education services program. That seems inequitable, and what we recognize is that that is not, I don't think, the intended. There are unintended consequences for that language. So that gives us the opportunity to make the adjustment within that. When we look at reducing, again, the disparities for students who are in EL, who are currently in EL services, and they are in early learning and special education, right now they are not funded at the level, and so they are not able to have full funding for breakfast. And so we want to ensure that if you are a student who is in early childhood and you are an EL student, that you have the opportunity to actually be fully funded for breakfast. When we look at the provision to increase to age 22, it is one of the things that allows us to be in line with what the federal government expects. When it says that you need to be able to provide education for students receiving special education services to the age of 21, there is a question on what does 21 mean? Does 21 mean the day that they turn 21, or does 21 mean the end of their 365th day of being 21? And so by being able to pull us into line, that means that within that, at age 22, it gives us the opportunity to serve our students to the age of 22. And then as we move forward, we look at the multi-tiered systems of support. This goes back again to the conversations that we've had. This, we know, as you have heard through a number of different testifiers who have come forward, they've talked about language at the space of tier 1, tier 2, and tier 3. The multi-tiered systems of support are the foundational components around that. We are seeing, we know the research, again, we know that this provides a foundation and a place and a space for a system and structure to be able to help to support the implementation of things like the letters and literacy and incentive time programs. And so in looking at supporting our regional centers, our service cooperatives, and providing funding to build that multi-tiered system of support across the state by providing opportunities for school districts to have access to grants to build their multi-tiered system of support to meet the individualized needs of each and every student across the state. And then to also look at, we know that we've heard a lot around the ability to build relationships and the support, not only the academic, but the social emotional learning of our students. That is what we're able to provide with being able to implement components from the BAR Center and that partnership. And then also utilizing our partnership with with Carrie and the for the University of Minnesota to be able to look at where are we starting and what are the results. Again, we are a results-oriented organization. We do also believe and know that there are expectations that these dollars that we are utilizing make a difference. And so we know that we need to be able to identify how we're making progress and how these dollars are being used and what that means for our students. And so this is something that allows us to be able to do that. As we walk into policy, there are just a couple that I would like to be able to highlight. I think the one that is the most important that we'd like to be able to frame in the policy components are that the summer food service program, the child and adult care food program integrity. We have had the opportunity, as you know, to be working with the federal government in a number of places throughout the USDA to really think about how it is we're going to continue to be able to provide summer food service programs as well as CACFP. As we have done work with the USDA as well as with the FBI and the U.S. Attorney General's office, we know that there are pieces where we need to be able to strengthen what the USDA has been able to provide. And these lists, these three pieces of policies allow us to do that. And so we believe that they are integral to the work. In addition, the support around providing the non-exclusionary discipline policies and implementation, it is one thing to be able to prohibit K through three suspensions. We also then need to be able to train on that, what that looks like in a by providing alternative suspensions and ensuring that our policies align with that work. I think that it's important to note that there are several things that we would have liked to have been able to see. We know that this target is a wonderful target, and we appreciate having this framework. Universal meals would have been something that we know that we would have wanted to be able to have for all of our students, because we believe that when you look through and live through Maslow's hierarchy of need, when you are not worried about where your next meal is going to come from, you can then focus your time and attention in a different way. But we are thankful that there is CEP that is included in this, and this is one of a very vast first step in moving toward universal meals. We also would like to be able to, and we will move forward with this in the coming years, is looking at expanding rigorous coursework and out of school time. We know that providing access both demographically and geographically across the state to ensure that our students have, again, equitable opportunities to access to coursework that is like PSEO, concurrent enrollment, IB, AP, CTE coursework, are some of the things that we know that our students also continue to keep our students in school. And our partnerships outside of school are incredibly important with our organizations who have been able to not only step up always, but stepped up especially through the pandemic. We wanted to be able to provide additional like context and places for our students to be able to go outside of school that are not only for all students, but are also culturally specific. And then also recognizing that American Indian Education Aid is something that we know that is something that we have talked a lot about. We believe that it is similar along the lines of looking at that as a cross subsidy, and we are deeply grateful for what we have in front of us. And so we're thankful that we have the opportunity to have this framework. We appreciate the work that has been done by the conference committee in looking at moving toward a package that not only gets common sense policies in place, but also a budget that really reflects the needs of our students, families, and school districts across this state. I think it is important to note that we have talked a lot about the academic components as well as the mental health of our students. And when we had our testifiers, Superintendent Lewandowski and our school counselor from District 287 came and testified last week, I got a call on Friday from Superintendent Lewandowski letting us know that there was another student who tried to take their life at school by jumping from the top of the stairs and from a balcony. And it was the police who were able to catch that student, and that student was hospitalized. But it underscores that it is not a one-time sporadic event. When they were talking about this, these are events that have happened. This is at least the fifth call that I have had from Superintendent Lewandowski talking about a student being at school attempting to take their life. And so we cannot only be singularly focused and looking solely at one point. We need to be able to meet the multifaceted needs of our students. And so it is incumbent on us to recognize that we have the opportunity to, again, live in the beauty of and not the tyranny of war. And so I'm asking us to be able to do that. I appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Pardon me, Commissioner. Thank you very much for that. Are there questions from members? on the administration's priorities. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I wanted the.
We value Senator Chamberlain's presence. I understand that the order of bills, I believe the Senate's coming back from recess. The order of the bills has changed and his are not queued up on deck. When would we be able to anticipate Senator Chamberlain joining us? I understand he's joining remotely, but it would still be good to have him here. Okay. Okay. Why don't we stand in recess for probably 5 minutes to allow you to do that? We are in recess. Everyone. I understand that the Senate has gotten itself into a bit of a knot and will take some time to untie that knot. So while we would certainly welcome Chair Chamberlain joining us, we do appreciate the other senators who are joining us via Zoom at this busy time. A question was raised by Senate staff about line 27 on the spreadsheet. The House is proposing fully funding career technical education in Minnesota. By doing so, we eliminate the career technical education levy in Minnesota. The benefits from that to school districts are obvious in that it allows it facilitates their providing critical career technical education coursework with full funding from the state. The structure of the proposal also allows us to extend unemployment insurance to school hourly workers on the same basis as their neighbors by removing a current blank exclusion in current law. Unemployment is a pact that Americans made with each other more than 80 years ago, that if you are unemployed through no fault of your own, available to work, and actively searching for work, we'll have your back. These school hourly workers are often the least paid, lowest paid workers in school districts. We need them in our schools, and they need to support their families. Unemployment insurance puts money into local communities. It buys food. It pays the rent and buys that new pair of shoes for the kid who seems to be going through yet another growth spurt. Including these workers in unemployment insurance coverage makes it harder to recruit and retain excluding these workers from unemployment insurance coverage makes it harder to recruit and retain these workers. We have a staffing crisis in schools today. The first step for any responsible employer facing these challenges would be to retain the staff that they have. By supporting these workers as we do, their neighbors, we support consistent and reliable staffing in Minnesota schools, and we repair a historic inequity in our unemployment insurance compensation system. Any questions to the House proposal presented this afternoon? Senator Eichhorn, I believe you have your hands up. Oh, excuse me. Senator Eichhorn, Wednesday, I believe it was, you stepped in for the chair when he was unavailable. The House has presented a proposal that is a framework for agreement. We have made clear our sense of urgency by doing so. When can we expect a Senate response that moves us towards agreement, demonstrates movement, and a commitment to finishing this work on time? No? My understanding is Senator Eichhorn is not available. Senator Coleman or Senator Duckworth? I'll ask the question in a more abbreviated fashion again. The House has provided a framework for a resolution. Is that you, Senator Duckworth?
It is. No need to repeat the question. I heard it.
Thank you.
I know you took a recess for a few minutes to afford us the kindness of trying to accomplish what we're doing on the Senate floor. Mm-hmm. If you're willing to give me a couple of minutes for finishing up a vote, I'll gladly come down and speak to your question.
Oh, Senator Duckworth, we'd welcome that. We'll stand in recess to the presence of Senator Duckworth, it appears. We are in recess. Thank you, Senator.
You're too kind. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just didn't want to surprise you. We have returned. Senator Duckworth, thank you for joining us. I recognize other Senate members are available on the Zoom. Good afternoon. The question, very briefly, was the House feels a sense of urgency. That's why we have presented a framework for agreement and recognize that it's Friday afternoon and we need to get to an agreement. When can we expect a response from the Senate that demonstrates an equal share of urgency?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize that you're getting the third string quarterback here, but such is the nature of conference committees and floor sessions that are going on. To reiterate some of where we've been and where we are right now in terms of equal urgency, I think the Senate has shown equal urgency as well as an equal willingness to work toward what might be considered somewhat of a joint or shared agreement. As you know, a large portion of our bill, really the only portion of our bill, was focused on literacy almost entirely. $30 million appropriated for literacy. And the House bill, a great preponderance of the allocation there had to do with the special education cross-subsidy. I know encountering back and forth, one of the offers we put forward was roughly a $50 million investment or allocation in literacy, and then a very substantial allocation, $950 million, toward the special education cross-subsidy, which, in my opinion, shows quite a significant movement toward what the House had identified as one of its larger priorities, and significant movement toward what I know many stakeholders, school districts, teachers, parents, you name it, would consider an important priority for them as well. And then most recently, I think we sent another offer that reedified roughly the $50 million literacy, $950 for special education cross-subsidy, and then outlined various policy positions that we were willing to agree with as well. So as I mentioned before, there's some urgency there to find agreement as well. I'm afraid with looking at the hourly school workers UI provision and this offer, which I apologize if I haven't been paying as much detail to these offers as I should, but I don't recall that being in the House bill originally or part of any other offers prior to this. So it is a bit of a curveball, unexpected. I know that this had been a topic of discussion earlier on in session as we were attempting to find agreement between the House and Senate as it relates to replenishing the UI or the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund, and that agreement was reached and we all moved forward. So to see it appear here obviously is somewhat catching us off guard, and we're scratching our heads trying to figure out how that would impact districts and whether or not they would be expected to pick up the tab regarding unemployment insurance moving forward for a whole host of workers. And we certainly don't want to add more expense to what they're already experiencing, hence the conversation we're having regarding the additional resources and funding for them. So all that to say, obviously you know we're on the floor of the Senate right now. Mm-hmm. Senator Chamberlain has a couple of bills that he's working on. I know that he and his team worked very expeditiously over the last 24, 48 hours to provide you a couple of different offers to include a counter. I would expect that he and the team will continue to do the same and meet the same sense of urgency that you have displayed as well.
Senator Duckworth, thank you for that. I do feel a need to remind the Senate that the second offer that we received from the Senate to the target was the exact same fiscal offer as the first offer we received from the Senate. That's not demonstrating progress. That's not demonstrating bargaining in a way that moves us towards agreement. And I think the fair for the public to be aware of that. On the unemployment insurance exclusion that currently exists in state law that discriminates against school hourly workers unfairly, including the way it's currently drafted, some school hourly workers qualify for unemployment insurance and others do not. Imagine working side by side with someone, both of you receiving a pink slip, both of you being available to work, both of you being actively out looking for work, and one of you gets access to some unemployment insurance compensation to help bridge you through that period of unemployment, and the other one does not.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
The Senator Duckworth.
So in terms of making progress, I agree. And I guess my opinion would be a new offer that includes that I don't think is maybe necessarily a step toward making progress. It's something completely new that's coming into the mix. And I would also say, imagine being one of those workers. I understand. Right now, I'm imagining being a school board member. I'm imagining being a superintendent. I'm imagining being a parent, a teacher, a kid, knowing that there's an offer on the table to fund the special education cross subsidy for $950 million, something that folks have been crying out for years. And I'm imagining them watch that slip through our fingers when we have the ability to make that deal today.
Well, Senator Duckworth, if you were a school teacher or a student or a parent, you would also be recognizing the need for mental health and wellness services in schools. You would also be recognizing that we short English language learners and have for many years in our funding system, even though they are clear, they're key to closing the literacy gap that we have a shared responsibility on. You would recognize that hungry kids can't learn and that providing additional support for meals in low-income communities is key to teaching and learning, as well as recognize the need to treat all workers with dignity and respect because they provide a valuable service to us. We've had school board members testify in support of this provision from Fridley and my old stomping grounds in Buffalo, testifying that they are in support of this provision. It has passed the House several times. It has been debated extensively in the Workforce Committee. This legislature should be about solving problems. And the only way the opportunity presented us slips through the fingers is if the Senate continues to delay. So I'm hoping this afternoon we will receive, with a sense of urgency and an obligation to the people of Minnesota, to find common ground and move closer. We will hear from the Senate. We have provided a framework that looks like what an agreement can look like, providing you respecting the priorities that the Senate has already identified, respecting those, while also providing additional flexibility for the Senate to choose, as it will, other priorities or enhancing those priorities. But it requires a sense of urgency. Thank you, Senator Duckworth. With that, members, we stand in recess.